Welcome back, everybody. This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. I'm Courtney. With me, as always, is Max Flight. Hello, Max.
Hey, Courtney. Hello, everybody.
And this is episode 49. As we were just talking about, we are one episode away from halfway. Halfway to what? We're not sure.
We'll figure out when we get there.
We're very excited to be talking with yet another aviation podcaster. That's Addison Schoenlund. He is the president of Innovation Analysis Group and also the voice behind the IAG blog podcasts. Addison, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, guys.
What do you guys say we jump into some aviation news?
Let's get started.
First up on the docket this week, this comes from Air Transport World, the Daily News, one of our favorite sources for aviation news. Boeing looks to 787 supply chain to achieve program profitability. Boeing Chairman, President, and CEO Jim McNerney said that with the 787 on the eve of first flight, we're returning to profitability and working on developing an efficient production process that will allow the manufacturer to benefit from the troubled program as quickly as possible. He says half of Boeing's aircraft programs have started at zero profitability, adding, we often start from lower profitability. The opportunity to drive profit margins with the 787 program is the supply chain. Now, Max and I were kind of talking about this. As odd as it seems that these programs, both in any manufacturing, aviation manufacturing process, they tend to start well below profitability. And here, this is actually decent news that the 787 is planned to start at zero profitability.
Yeah, that's almost starting ahead. I'm surprised when it says that about half of the programs, the only half of them start with zero profitability. I was kind of surprised that it wasn't more than that.
But this story kind of allows us to talk about the big news item of the week coming out of Everett, and that is the engine start on the 787.
All right.
You will be able to see plenty of pictures from John Ostrower's blog. I'm going to get this right this time, Max. flightglobal.com/flightblogger.
Got it.
So a lot of things coming all together very quickly here with the 787 as they look for that first flight before the beginning of the third quarter.
Yeah, we are certainly looking with a lot of anticipation towards the first flight. It's kind of the biggest milestone towards the front of the program. And it's one that Boeing certainly wants to hit on target, and they want to hit with a certain degree of flawlessness in execution. So, I mean, the eyes of the world are watching Boeing.
Now, Addison, you had mentioned just kind of some interesting theories that came out of lessons learned, if you will, the A380 program, where so much had gone wrong, if you will, before the launch of the first delivery of the aircraft, that they fixed a lot of the problems, already leading them to a 99% dispatch rate. Is this something that we plan on seeing with the 787 as well?
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that the gestation that these programs have taken, that, you know, that there was an expectation that the technology and these companies had become so clever that they could pull rabbits out of a hat, and then we found out that actually you have to make the hat, and then you have to go and buy the rabbit, and it's complicated, very, very complicated. However, I think it's clear that we can see that Airbus, despite its, I mean, you know, 2-year delay, that was huge, and it was very, very expensive. I think that one can take the lessons learned at Airbus, and you will note, and you probably will recall, that during all that terrible disruption and clearly an awful time for Airbus, Boeing never cheered, smiled. They never said a thing, because they know how complicated this industry is.
Sure.
Now they're going through the same problem, and they too have taken extraordinary amount of time to work on all the things that could be worked on the ground. Hence, you will see, for example, accelerated gauntlet. Hence, you will see, for example, accelerated test program. They feel clearly confident sure, are they under pressure? Of course, they're under pressure. Their customers are irritated. Everybody's irritated. And their deliveries are now going to come at the wrong time in the economic cycle. That said, people know that oil is already up 30% this year from a nice, decent price in February. So oil is going to go up again. So efficient airplanes are going to be needed. There are a lot of 767s that need to be replaced. And that clearly is going to be the sweet spot for the 787. So there's all kinds of reasons to say that despite the fact that there's been this downswing and airlines are struggling, those customers that have ordered the 787 want them, which is why not that many have been canceled. And I think we are going to see marvelous performance from Boeing and the 787 program when it starts to fly, because they've had the time to work out all these issues.
You know, it's very interesting, the point you made about, you know, Boeing not saying anything when the A380 had the problems, because one of the stories that we read last week is Airbus is doing exactly that. You know, they came out saying, we're not going to have problems with the A350.
Well, look at the if you were running EADS, and for that matter for Airbus, think about the situation you're in. You've built the 380. You spent untold billions of resources building this airplane to get it to work right. You missed the economic cycle. You would have sold a whole bunch more had you delivered on time. In the meantime, not only has the cash flow from that program not appeared when it was meant to appear in the business plan, you've got this catastrophic thing called the A400M.
Yes.
And that is sucking money so fast, it's frightening. Oh, by the way, you also need to start putting money into the A350. Now, where's all this coming from? So guess what? You put on a brave face and you talk up your people and you tell your team that you think that they're doing great work and that everybody, I'm sure, is doing their very best efforts. From what I've heard, the A400 program is starting to settle down a little. They think they fixed up the FADEC engine problem. I've even heard that they will fly this airplane, if not late 2009. Which might be a miracle, but certainly in the beginning of 2010, that airplane will fly. Now, of course, there's all kinds of jokes about the A400. You know, you've seen Richard Abulafia's great suggestion that they cancel the A400 program. The U.S. Air Force buys KC-330 tankers, and then the Europeans buy C-17s. You know, it's very yeah. funny. It's very funny, but, you know, the world is not that big that we can afford all these different programs. However, the A400 commitment is so massive from the governments. You know, Airbus is run like a corporation for the outside world, but really it's an employment machine for the European community.
Sure.
And that's not to criticize them. That's their social contract with their electorate. So the Airbus has to put in a brave face.
I think that's very well said.
Thank you.
Okay, moving into the next story. This from NASDAQ, oddly enough. Good find, Max. U.S. Senate confirms FAA DOT nominees. Randolph Babbitt, an aviation consultant and former president of the Airline Pilots Association, will now take the helm of the FAA. Two of Babbitt's most pressing tasks will be to resolve labor disputes involving air traffic controllers and to find funding for long-held plans to revamp the nation's air traffic management system, project known as NextGen. Not two very easy tasks to have to deal with as the new head of the FAA.
I think Babbitt's confirmation was the easy part of this. Now the hard part starts.
And another point about those two items is that they're in direct conflict with one another. Of course, you know, Babbitt being the ex-head of ALPA and having to deal with a labor dispute from the other side now while still trying to retain the ability to acquire funding, congressional funding, as well as to not spend too much on the air traffic controllers for next gen. It's kind of a tricky situation he finds himself in. Babbitt told the Senate Commerce Committee earlier this week that the FAA also might need to revisit standards for smaller commuter aircraft and their crews. The other addition, this to the DOT, the Senate also approved John Porcari, who will leave his current job as one of Maryland's top transportation officials, to be the Department of Transportation's deputy secretary.
So the team's in place. I think that everyone is pretty much happy with the nominees. All sides think these are great folks, and so now it's time to step up to the plate and start to tackle some tough issues. And it's kind of unlikely that everyone will remain as enthusiastic a supporter as they are now starting out. So the job is tough, and we're going to have to make some tough decisions, and not everyone's going to be happy with the results, I think.
Did you say that you think everybody's happy with the choice?
Yes, I did, Addison.
Do you think that the airline CEOs are happy with the choice?
I think they've had an opportunity to express a different opinion, and I haven't seen it. Have you seen?
I don't think anybody's going to say something public, but you basically are seeing big labor moving into all kinds of interesting places in the new administration.
Sure.
And we know that one of the greatest problems facing the U.S. airline industry is the Railway Act and its inflexibility. And you've got this peculiar thing called seniority, which is another thing that's throttling the industry. I'm very concerned that the absence of labor flexibility is what destroyed Detroit and may well end up destroying the airline industry.
Yes, certainly an issue here. Yes.
But consider that he finds himself at the head of the FAA and not necessarily the DOT. The head of the FAA, that position is, as should be, focused on safety, right? So even if, and I don't disagree with you, Addison, that the airline CEOs aren't all that excited about Randy Babbitt being in the head chair of the FAA, but they can't say that because anything that he would do to hurt the airlines would be, at least at the surface, to increase safety. So they can't ever say that, no, we think this is too high a cost for the small amount of safety that it increases. So
the big thing of the airlines, they all want next-gen ATC. Everybody's wanted this for how many years? Decades?
Why is it
that inside the Beltway, inside the Beltway I heard described today by somebody in very hysterical terms, but I think it's appropriate. Inside the Beltway is a place that lives inside of a particular area, and outside of the Beltway is reality. The problem that you're dealing with here is everybody in the industry understands the critical need to reform ATC. Why is it that once people go inside the Beltway, they leave reality and they cannot get this done? This is not a zero-sum game. Everybody wins. Airlines make more money so they can pay their employees more. They make profits so they pay taxes. What's the rocket science involved that stops the people who have the power to make these decisions, to make things happen? Why does that not move forward? Why is it that we've had time and again billions wasted on trying to get this sorted out? It never gets sorted out. Is it so complicated?
Well, is it an organizational issue? Is there another issue? I don't know. That's truly a question that I don't know. And if it is an organizational issue, then would the addition of Randy Babbitt be considered at least their attempt at a solution?
I wish I could answer the question. It's beyond me.
Well, moving into the next story, this also comes out of Washington. This from the Buffalo News, actually. The House on Thursday voted to authorize a congressional study of pilot training in the wake of the crash of Continental Connection 3407. The Safety Board held hearings last week revealing that Flight 3407's co-pilot earned about $16,000 a year and commuted from Seattle to Newark, New Jersey on a red-eye flight the morning of February 12th. In addition, the investigation revealed that Flight 3407's pilot did not receive simulator training in every aspect of the plane stall recovery system. LaHood said he commuted on regional jets between Washington and his home in Illinois during his 14 years in the House and never felt unsafe doing so. Americans ride on regional jets every day, and they do it safely, he said. But the article was quick to point out, as I was thinking, as I read those, they're talking about a Bombardier Q400, which is a turboprop.
Yeah, not a jet.
Not a regional jet.
But anyway, the interesting thing to me about LaHood's comments is that he said that the FAA will follow safety recommendations that the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, issues in its final report. I don't think the FAA in the past has been, you know, so free to, you know, state in advance that they will follow the recommendations of the NTSB.
This news that's coming out of this, including this article here, is frustrating because it implies that the regional airlines are held to a different standard, and that is absolutely 100% not the case. As far as the FAA is concerned, a Part 121 carrier, which is a scheduled airline for all intents and purposes, are all the same. So Colgan Airlines flying a Q400, which I'm almost positive they fly under 121 rules, is identical to the standards of a major airline 777 international captain making $300,000 a year or whatever that may be. The standards are not different. The only thing that's different is the pay. Hmm. And as a result, the experience level of the people that are coming into those positions. So, you know, I used to fly with guys all the time that would say, hey, if you're going to pay me, I'll fly a Cessna 150 all over the place, and I would be the first to get in line behind that guy. The rest requirements are the same. There are major airline pilots that fly red eyes from Seattle to Newark. I'm sure Continental has international captains who commute from Seattle. That it's a regional airline had no bearing on that. The only variable here is $16,000 a year for the first officer, and it does affect things, as I think we're seeing. But all this promise of bringing standards up with the regional airlines, they're there. Hmm.
So maybe this is just inside the Beltway puffery too.
And that's what bothers me.
Well, the thing is that, you know, you look at this and you say the money's not really the issue here. That particular co-pilot had to work as a coffee shop barista as well to try to make a living. And I had someone say to me, I think it was last week, well, you know, Sullenberger flew coast to coast the day before his ditching in the Hudson. And my point to this person was, sure, but you're talking about a senior pilot who probably sat in first class from San Francisco, whereas mm-hmm. this lady commuted from Seattle. I guarantee you she was not in first class. Let me rephrase it. I'm highly confident she was not. And she probably had her day job and she was exhausted. I've spoken to people before. I did two podcasts on pilot fatigue. I should probably send you guys the links. And I interviewed pilots and they were talking about what it's like to commute 400 miles to work. And the problem is that let's say your first flight is at 8 in the morning. You have to turn up a couple of hours before that to go through the paperwork and do everything else. And then you have to, you know, you keep going back and then you find out that this person left home at 2 in the morning. They right. have not had 8 hours of rest.
Right.
And oh, by the way, they don't fly coast to coast, you know, in a nice glass cockpit. They are doing ups and downs and through the traffic and through the mountains and through the trees and all day long. They fly a very different profile. And I'm sure that if there was an ability to take all the, you know, the angles out of this, you would find that probably a turboprop pilot works harder than any other commercial pilot.
I would agree with that, actually, just simply from the number of operations every day, the number of takeoffs and landings per hours flown.
Now, they don't fly into nice, big, fancy airports, you know. They're flying into who knows where.
Right, which has actually its pros and cons. It kind of equals its way out. It's a lot easier, you know, flying into who knows where than flying in and out of LaGuardia all day or JFK and dealing with those controllers. Sorry if any one of you are listening to the podcast, but you've been mean to me several times. look, if we've narrowed it down that the only real variable is pay, but associated with that is experience. I think now we're starting to get to the crux of it, and that's experience. Their claim that the training was inadequate, perhaps, but that's not a regional airline thing. That was specific to this. You're in FAA training. You know, it's all kind of relative. This is a perfect example of legislation is written through blood, unfortunately. And sometimes it's just kind of popular to jump on the bandwagon and say regional airlines need to be at the standard of the major airlines, but they are. I mean, that's my point. Now, and I know where you're going with the pay and the reasons with that, and I agree 100% with that. Regional airline pay is a problem. The only problem with that is there are pilots who are meeting the requirements that are willing to work for $16,000 a year.
Okay.
All right, moving into the next news item. And Max, this is our third from Washington. How do you like that? We're doing a lot of Washington news today.
Yeah, a lot of D.C. action.
This article from Easy Bourse. U.S. House passes FAA bill. The U.S. House passed legislation Thursday to curtail international airline alliances, a move proponents said would increase competition, but which the industry warned could cost jobs. Airlines strongly opposed a measure that would strip them of exemptions to antitrust laws 3 years after enactment of the legislation. The exemptions allow airlines to join global alliances that coordinate schedules and share revenue. Airlines would be able to apply for new exemptions after 3 years, but under possibly tougher standards. Interestingly, also attached to this legislation, the House would also toughen rules that require that 75% of a U.S. airline be owned and operated by U.S. citizens. It spells out what activities must be controlled by U.S. citizens. Oberstar, a name that should be familiar to the airplane geeks, said the measure is designed to ensure that foreign investors don't exert too much control over prices and schedules in the U.S., but the European Union said the provision runs counter to a landmark deal between the U.S. and the EU to deregulate international air travel. So, Max, it seems like this has cleared at least an important hurdle in what may be on its way to be signed into law.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how the Senate reacts to this, because this reauthorization bill really contains, you know, a lot of issues that are fairly contentious. We've talked in the past about, you know, this notion that airline alliances, which until now have been, I guess, pretty much, you know, without expiration. You toss into that a 3 year review that might negate the alliance. That's really disruptive to the airlines, any kind of large company that is forming partnerships with other companies. It's just sort of an impossible situation. But this also has a fuel tax increase for non-commercial aviation. This is the issue that the general aviation folks are a little bit concerned about. This is the notion of shifting some of the funding away from the airlines into the general aviation community. They're not happy about that. This also includes an issue that FedEx and UPS are very interested in carefully watching. This is the issue of labor coverage under the National Labor Relations Act or under the Railway Labor Act. Something that we were talking with Addison about before we started the podcast.
You know, also in the article, it mentions that this could also increase the limit on the passenger facility charge from $7 or to $7 from $4.50. So it doesn't say that all PFCs will increase by that much, but the limit will increase. So this seems to be kind of everything that an airline doesn't want.
How can the government go and make these alliances that they've been given the go-ahead by the Department of Justice? How can they go and do this now? This is insane.
It really is.
Well, you know, you've got the same situation going on right now in the auto industry, where people were buying secured debt backed by assets. Along comes the government and says, well, you know what? We're not giving you 100 cents on the dollar. I know you were guaranteed under bankruptcy law, but guess what? We're just going to trash your asset anyway. This is crazy. This is crazy. This is water under the bridge. All these alliances are in place and are quite rightly assumed to be in place by the partners outside the U.S. To go and undo this now and put them all in question, that's very peculiar, very strange.
Yeah, and hence the EU's response to it. You know, Virgin Atlantic and Branson has been at least indirectly supportive of this, as they've been very opposed to a lot of the alliances that are happening in the Atlantic that we'll be talking about later. So there are those that back some sort of legislation. But, you know, Addison, to your point, it's almost like one hand doesn't really know what the other hand's doing.
It's the fact that inside, outside the beltway thing, isn't it? Yeah. We keep coming back to that.
Very good point. Okay, moving into the next story, which is very closely tied. This from Air Transport World Daily News once again. Air France, KLM, Delta signed transatlantic JV worth $12 billion annually. CEOs of Air France, KLM Group, and Delta Airlines signed a profit-loss-sharing joint venture agreement yesterday in Paris, covering a wide network around 10 hubs representing more than 200 flights and approximately 50,000 seats per day. The airline said the venture, which will concentrate on service to and from Amsterdam, Atlanta, Detroit, Minneapolis, JFK, Charles de Gaulle, Cincinnati, Lyon, Memphis, and Salt Lake City, represents about 25% of the industry's total transatlantic capacity. On all routes between North America and Europe, between Amsterdam and India, between North America and Tahiti, Air France, KLM, and Delta will consensually share capacity, revenue, costs, and profits losses. The deal can be canceled with a 3-year notice after an initial 10-year term, or if Oberstar raises his gavel and says, "Nein, stop."
Well, I don't know if the timing of this is coincidental with, you know, with what we were just talking about previously with the FAA authorization bill or not. Probably not. I mean, an arrangement like this, an alliance like this, is not something that you dream up in a few weeks and you know, and get to this point. I mean, I think this is probably preceded by, you know, months of planning and discussions and so forth. So yeah, it's probably coincidental, but you know, you got to wonder if it's not impacted by this, you know, specter of, you know, a possible 3-year limit on the alliance. I mean, I think both parties would have to be keeping that in mind.
Now, it almost to Oberstar's point for the legislation, how does this affect competition or the prospect of future competition across the Atlantic? Because now there's a very large percentage of the traffic controlled by alliances with BA and American and Iberia in one. You have the Star team, and now you also have this Air France KLM Delta deal.
But isn't that probably enough? I mean, how many, you know, powerhouses do you need for transatlantic flight? I mean, if you have 3 or 4, doesn't that seem like that would be enough to maintain, you know, the competition to benefit the flying public?
I don't know. Ask Freddie Laker.
Yeah, Freddie.
This sounds awfully suspiciously like the cargo price fixing scheme that that airlines were required to pay hundreds of million dollars for. But this is legal.
I kind of view this as consolidation. And as long as it doesn't represent adverse impact on the consumer, then consolidation that ensures the survival of the participants, I think, is a good thing. The debatable issue is what's the impact? What's the ultimate impact on the consumer? And if you think it's positive, meaning, you know, lower fares through more competition or higher levels of service through competition, then hey, you know, I'm fine with it. If it negatively impacts the customer, if it's more like a cartel, or, you know, it goes in that direction, you know, then it's not a good thing.
Because this is not about the benefiting the consumer.
That's my point, I guess.
It's about benefiting the airline industry and cutting their costs and rationalizing their fleet fleet efficiencies. The difficulty is here, if you're going to give this alliance permission to do so, you are almost, well, I would like to use the word morally, but then again, we'll be talking about inside the Beltway. You have to give one world equal playing time. You have to give Star equal playing time. Then you've got some sort of benefit for the consumer. You can't have one alliance with immunity and the others don't have immunity. That's irrational.
Right, sure.
Agreed.
And the way that the consumer benefits is that you have these people tearing at each other. And we know from experience in the industry that pricing is set by the market. And now it's who's going to give me the best deal. And the best deal is not necessarily the money. It's the combination of time, in other words, schedule, and perceived service. I say perceived because it's hard to talk about service in the airline industry anymore.
Increasingly.
Right. Yeah. But we should move into the next story, which is also a code-sharing story. This comes from the Chicago Tribune. Southwest WestJet code-sharing program delayed due to economy. A code-sharing program involving Southwest Airlines and the Canadian airline WestJet has been delayed because of difficult economic conditions. In response to the current economic environment, Southwest is focusing its immediate attention on several critical objectives, including increasing our revenues, said Bob Jordan. He's the Southwest Airlines Executive Vice President of Strategy and Planning, says WestJet. WestJet understands the decision made by Southwest. Our continued U.S. expansion is a key strategy for our airline, but code-sharing is only one element. Both airlines remain committed to minimizing delays and are focused on generating revenue as quickly as possible. I don't get this. Am I missing something here? I mean, isn't the whole reason they did this to generate revenue?
You would think. I mean, maybe there's other issues that are causing difficulties and the difficult economic conditions happen to be, kind of a convenient way to defer this.
And maybe that's not entirely true, because as I thought about this, I did consider some issues that would have kind of played this on. First, I think it's quite obvious that Southwest made the decision, seeing as, well, WestJet understands the decision made by Southwest. But you do run the risk of service keeping up, your high level of service with introducing something as large as this. But maybe it's just as simple as Southwest isn't making money where they would be taking their passengers to connect with WestJet, which I believe was Chicago Midway. In which case, you could blame the economy. I don't know. This is entirely speculation, but it doesn't sound like we're hearing the entire reason or story behind it.
Yeah, it kind of feels that way, but
WestJet is also having all kinds of issues. Air Canada is not in a great shape right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were WestJet right now, you would be focusing on the situation in Canada. WestJet also got a relationship it's trying to build with One World right now. So there's a lot of stuff going on that doesn't necessarily make this so-called co-chair agreement really as exciting as you would want it to be. You remember the big excitement about Aer Lingus and JetBlue? We haven't heard much about that one lately.
That's a good point, yeah. Yeah, you're right. But it seems to me, especially with two airlines that seem to kind of be pigeonholed into the leisure market and trying to break out of that, that for Southwest, what they would want to do is announce their first international destination through WestJet, give the business travelers access to some very large business centers in Canada, significantly Toronto and Montreal. And for WestJet to give access, low fare access to the States. I guess what I'm saying here, and I think Max, you're agreeing with me, is something's going on. I'm not sure what.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. This one's interesting. Okay, moving into our other Southwest news, and a lot of news has come out in the last week around the thriving metropolis of Milwaukee. Milwaukee.
Well, what's going on in Milwaukee?
Going on there. This is where the new battleground was. Remember when it was Denver with Frontier, Southwest, United? Well, the focus has now shifted to Milwaukee. Why, you may ask? Because Southwest has added service to Milwaukee. This from Aviation Week. Battle brewing in Milwaukee. It will be the fourth destination added by the airline this year, that being Southwest. The others being Minneapolis-St. Paul, New York LaGuardia, and Boston Logan. This time, however, Southwest is expanding its network without expanding its fleet. Interesting. Hometown carrier Midwest has scaled back its operations there significantly and altered the nature of its service, having ditched 16 of 25 717s in favor of smaller RJs in a financing deal with Republic. That's part two of this story. Republic will now fly 190s, Embraer 190s for Midwest, mostly out of Milwaukee. And part three of this story, Midwest is also facing a growing challenge from AirTran. They decided to make a big effort in Milwaukee after its failed effort to acquire Midwest. AirTran will offer 34 peak day flights there this summer, up 50% from last year. Also interesting to add that a press release came out from Christopher White, our guest last week, the day after Southwest announced that they will be in Milwaukee. Actually, I believe it was that afternoon. So the three things going on in Milwaukee, Max, you got Southwest adds service, Midwest moves to RJs with Republic, and AirTran, the day of the Southwest announcement, announces an expansion in Milwaukee.
Yeah, my head is spinning. I don't know what to think.
Yeah, I've got to say that when I listened to that news, I thought it's really odd that you look at this and you say, well, if Milwaukee was such a happening market, where have they been up to now? And clearly the idea is Southwest is picking up traffic from the south part of Chicago through Midway. They'll pick up traffic on the northern suburbs through Milwaukee. So that makes sense from a Southwest perspective. AirTran obviously is going to do well there because they had eyeballed Milwaukee earlier on anyway as a place to grow, whether that was with or without Midwest. And when you look at that in the end, you say, well, what role is there left for Midwest to play? And that's not an easy answer.
They could make cookies for AirTran in Southwest.
I don't know that they're going to last as long as it takes to bake a cookie because, you know, it's going to be a very tough thing. You see that they're not even flying their own airplanes anymore.
Right.
And you may or may not have seen the story that they owe Republic $3 million and they're going to take a little bit of extra time to pay that.
Right.
So it doesn't look real good for Midwest, which is sad because they had a very good following and they had a very good product. But, you know, times have moved on and what do you do?
Well, I'll tell you the one clear winner here, Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Definitely. And Northern Chicago, for sure. They're going to get great. They're going to have a fair war. It's going to be delightful.
Absolutely. So now, Addison, I understand that we've run out of time and you have to go. We do greatly appreciate you coming and offering your insight. Hopefully, we can have you back and we'll do a little bit more talking again sometime soon.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Again, that's Addison Schoenlin. He runs the IAG podcast. And Addison, what is the URL that they can find those podcasts?
Try iagblog.podomatic.com.
Addison, again, thank you so much.
Thanks, gentlemen. Good night.
Good night.
Bye, Addison.
Thank you again to Addison Schoenlin. Now we have Max with his pick of the week.
Yes, my pick this week is a site, DustinCurtis.com. Dustin Curtis is a very interesting guy, it turns out. He is a interface designer who sometimes travels, and when he does that, he goes online like many people do. In this particular case, he went to the American Airlines website and decided that it was a horrible user experience, such that he said that he vowed that he would never fly American again because the experience of their website was so terrible. And but that's not all he did. Being a interface designer, he actually put together an alternative web page for American Airlines and then sent that to them as along with a letter expressing his displeasure. Now, in most cases, you would think that would sort of be the end of it. You know, he got upset, he had his rant, he passed it along, and that would be the end of it. Well, it turns out that he actually heard back from American Airlines. In fact, one of their experience architects wrote back, and you can find all this on Dustin Curtis's site, and it makes for fascinating reading. The guy from AA, explained that there are, get this, almost 200 people involved in running AA.com, and he explains how in a large corporate environment, how this brings a certain amount of inflexibility. It's just not the kind of environment that's conducive to responding quickly anyway to the sort of consumer needs. So all this makes fascinating reading. If you go to DustinCurtis.com, you want to take a look for the posts that relate to this topic, and there are two of them: his initial letter to American Airlines, along with his suggestions for improvement, and the response from them. Again, fascinating reading. That's my pick for this week. DustinCurtis.com.
Great, thanks, Max. We are this week, due to time issues and our inability to do a main topic this week, we are going to run everything into one. So now we're going to go into some listener feedback, which, again, Max, we've got a lot.
Boy, we sure do.
And that's good.
Great. That's good.
It's fantastic. Want to just go ahead and start up from the top. We got an email from Jet Bob. Jet Bob sends us a nice little link. Is by the United Airline pilots to get Glenn Tilton fired from the post of CEO and president of United Airlines. He says, please support the cause. It's glenntilton.com, which the title is Glenn Tilton Must Go. You can imagine what's on it. But this is a push from the employees of United Airlines to get rid of their CEO. Max, how far have employees gone to get rid of their CEO? And is this it? Is this the furthest we've seen?
I think it may be. I mean, the online opportunities represent sort of a new forum that you can use to really, well, obviously express any kind of an opinion or agenda that you have, and maybe taking down the CEO is just the latest application of that ability.
And at some point, you have to start looking at what the employees have been saying for a very, very long time, and start to look at it seriously. Again, the website is glenntilton.com. That's G-L-E-N-N, two N's, T-I-L-T-O-N.com. Has some interesting things on it. And might I add, Max, that I am not agreeing nor disagreeing with the website for one major reason, and that is you never know when Glenn's going to offer me a job. And in this industry, I need all the
kitchen. Yeah, don't burn those bridges.
This email comes from Grant in Australia. He will be putting together an interview for us with a simulator bunch out of Australia. You will be able to hear that here on Airplane Geese. We don't want to give away too much, other than he says it's going to be pretty cool. He says he has a little bit of work to do before he can go to bed for a few hours, get up to go crew hot air balloons in the valley. I'm officially jealous.
Yeah, that sounds great. But we're getting a lot of action out of Australia from the there's a lot of airplane geeks down there, it turns out.
There are, absolutely. And we also have this bit from Steve Vischer, the head of the Australia desk for the Airplane Geeks, on the latest in Australia news.
Well, g'day, it's Steve Vischer here at the Airplane Geeks Australia desk, talking to you from sunny Melbourne in Victoria, with a couple of articles from local papers here in Melbourne this week. This first article is entitled Aussie Hoaxer Jailed, and this comes from the MX newspaper, which is at www.mxnet.com.au, and deals with an Australian flight attendant who's been jailed for 18 months for leaving a bomb hoax on board an Emirates aircraft on which he was working. This sparked a scare at London's Gatwick Airport, which led to it to be closed. Melbourne-born man Matthew Carney left a message in the toilet of the flight from Dubai to London in March, which read, "Explosive material can be found in the forward cargo compartment. We have the Taliban to thank for this," unquote. A passenger found the note 10 minutes before the plane was due to land and raised the alarm. When the flight arrived at Gatwick, it was taken to a secure holding area and surrounded by armed police. The 164 passengers and 16 crew were taken off the plane and interviewed, and Carney was subsequently arrested. He pleaded guilty to communicating false information. The court was told that earlier in the flight, Carney told co-workers he had quote-unquote found wires hanging down from behind the mirror in the toilet. But senior cabin crew members who inspected the area found that the wires were not attached to anything, and the plane carried on to Britain. Because of the earlier incident, Carney was arrested and his luggage was searched. Inside a pair of his shorts was found a piece of paper with the words, quote, cargo contains explosives, which handwriting experts linked to the note that was left in the toilet. So a very silly boy there, and I'm sure he'll be a guest of the British prison system for the next year and a half, and I'm sure he'll have a lot of time to consider what a foolish action that was. And just as a second article here, just as a follow-up to a recent article I sent over regarding a Virgin Blue 737 being more or less intercepted by a remote control plane with a camera attached, this article also appeared in the MX newspaper and is entitled "The Model Plane Man is in the Clear." A man who flew a model plane within 30 metres of a Virgin Blue flight from Melbourne has escaped jail. Shane Curry of the Perth suburb of Redcliffe attached a video camera to his remote control plane and flew it from a park. A video posted on YouTube showed the model following the jet before being sucked into its airstream, plummeting out of control and crashing. And says here Mr. Curry has not been charged, so whether or not it was a hoax, I guess, is still up for debate, but I'm sure the man in question will think twice, hopefully, before doing such a foolish thing again. I'm Steve Vischer at the Airplane Geeks Australia desk. Max and Court, back to you.
Thanks, Steve. And might I add, that was fantastically produced. And we cannot thank Steve enough. In fact, Steve, we think you did such a great job that we want everybody else to try to do such a great job and send us stories just like that.
Yeah, please do. We'll look forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. We look forward to it. And we just ask that you try to keep them below 5 minutes because, I mean, let's face it, the only reason Max and I do this podcast is to hear ourselves talk. I got another email here, this from Paul. He says, I listen to your podcast every week and I enjoy it. What is the name of the opening theme song and who does it? We haven't actually mentioned this in a while, Max, but I think about time to throw out another plug for Brother Love, because he puts together great music. Brother Love, the opening song is There She Goes, and the closing song is Summertime, both by Brother Love. You can check that out at brotherloverocks.com. Paul goes on to say, he says, I'm not a pilot, but I really love your show. I fly weekly from my home in Lexington to Orlando. And he craves each new episode. He's done this commute, by the way, for 3.5 years.
Wow. A real trooper.
A real trooper. A true airplane geek. So thank you, Paul, for that message. Okay, we've got another email from Jet Bob. He says, here's my idea for an airplane t-shirt. If you aren't an airplane geek, what are you?
You're nothing.
Absolutely nothing. So thanks to Jet Bob for sending in that t-shirt suggestion. Might I add that I finally got a hold of the person, it was Dave, I believe, who gave us the suggestion for the Geek with Altitude t-shirt, and his t-shirt is on the way. Don't forget that you can get your t-shirts at airplanegeeks.com, or you can even go to cafepress.com/airplanegeeks, but go to airplanegeeks.com and go through our links there. It's much easier, and we have them all set up for you. Still have the two t-shirts, one just the logo, and then, of course, we have the Geek with Altitude shirt that I prefer. I think that's a really nice shirt, Max.
Yeah, I like them all. I'm good. I'm ordering a bunch.
This next email comes from Grant in Australia. Looks like OzJet, which is an airline out of Perth, Australia, is shutting down. This article comes from Perth Now. Airline OzJet has suspended operating its 737 fleet from Perth, the carrier confirmed on May 20th. OzJet Airlines offered flights from Perth to Derby and Bali. Passengers have been left in the lurch by the sudden suspension over more than $200,000 in unpaid fees owed Perth Airport. Whoops, but I'm sure they're not the only ones.
Yeah.
So another one bites the dust. Looks like OzJet flying their 73s out of Perth have shut down. So thanks, Grant, for that email. Another major story coming out of Australia this week. And see, Max, these are stories that we wouldn't get otherwise.
Yeah, that's right.
This didn't come across my main news item, but I think it is big news. 97 killed in a military airplane crash. An Indonesian military transport plane carrying more than 100 people on board crashed and burst into flames, killing at least 97 people. The C-130 Hercules aircraft plowed into several houses on the ground, scattering debris and sending flames and billowing smoke into the air. 97 people had been killed, 15 injured.
Grim situation.
Absolutely. And again, thanks to Steve for sending this email out of Australia, as this is big news. And again, didn't show up in any of our news feeds here in the U.S.
All right.
Our next piece of news comes from Steve Fisher. And I think, Max, again, something that did not come across my desk because it is out of New Zealand. In fact, this comes from Air New Zealand, and it's a commercial. This is my favorite story that Steve has ever sent us.
Yeah.
Might I add.
Tell us about it.
Now, this commercial talks about how Air New Zealand cabin crew have stripped off for a raunchy new advertisement where they carry out their duties wearing nothing more than body paint. It's funny, and it's true. More than 90 Air New Zealand staff members are featured in the cheeky campaign, pun intended, with 8 donning only body paint. CEO Rob Fife also took part in the ad and was crowned New Zealand's sexiest businessman as a result. We're going to have a link to this. If I can't embed it in the website, we will definitely have a link to it. It is definitely worth watching. It's funny.
It's whoever the artist was is pretty talented, that's for sure.
So make sure you check out the ad. It's definitely one of my favorite airline ads, which tend to be pretty funny. We also got an email from Dave. Dave is from The Onion, Max.
The Real Onion?
The Real Onion, which define real when you're dealing with The Onion, but still.
Yeah, good point.
He says, hey guys, I've heard you mention this a few times on the podcast, so I wanted to give you a shout and say you've got at least one fan over here. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, how cool is that?
I love The Onion. This was great. And yeah. And then the problem I had was I was excited. It's like, wow, The Onion is like one of the great sources for reputable false information.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, everybody knows The Onion.
Professional false information.
Everybody
funny
knows
as hell,
The Onion.
Usually.
Absolutely hysterical. Everybody knows The Onion, except the people that were in my immediate vicinity when I read this email and was excited. They had never heard of it.
Hard to believe. Very hard to believe.
So thanks, Dave, for the email, definitely. And we're glad to hear that somebody at The Onion is at least shaking their head at our horrible jokes over here, saying that's not how you do it. And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Also got an email. I found this to be quite interesting, from the Chicago O'Hare Airport.
Yeah.
They wanted to let us know that they've redesigned their website. And you can find it at o'hare-airport.org. And I went there, and there are some very interesting things about it. But most importantly, Max, it got me thinking about airport websites.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wanted to do was put together my top 5. But then I thought, there's no way I'm going to all these websites. So I figured I need to ask the Airplane Geeks listeners for our top 5 airport websites.
I have
some in mind. So send your suggestions to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com, and hopefully I will have find time to put together the top 5 airport websites. This from O'Hare, some things that I really like about it. One, right on the front page, it has some arrival and departure information, as well as some pretty good terminal maps. So this actually came from the website administrator, Natalia. Thank you, Natalia, for the email. And for those, make sure to go to o'hareairport.org. That's o'hare-airport.org. And let us know what you think.
It's a really clean design. Very nice.
It is. It's very nice. I also got an email from Richard. He is our United expert, we'll call him. He said he read this and wanted to stab myself in the eyeballs. He said he felt embarrassed.
Please don't.
He said he felt embarrassed like the first time he saw his mother write LOL in a text message. Some people should not be left unsupervised with technology, and United Twitter staffer dreamed up this should be one of them. It's not really Airplane Geeks podcast crucial material. I disagree, but if nothing else, you give Court a heck of a laugh anyway. United has announced Twares. Now, we had talked a bit about United joining Twitter, and we are following them. I believe it's United Airlines, so you can follow them as well. But one of the things they're doing is they're offering Twares. Some good things and some bad things. Let's start with the bad. Max, it's called Twares.
I kind of liked it.
I don't get it. You're not the one that suggested it, are you?
It's no, absolutely not. No, it's fares on Twitter. Special airfares on Twitter. So kind of twares make sense.
How about Twitters or something? Okay, whatever. So that aside, it does, you know, and maybe it's one of those things like it's so bad that it draws attention.
That works.
So, see? And so what they're doing with this is they're offering, and we kind of suggested this in the news, as Edison mentioned, they're offering some pretty great deals through Twitter. Max, I don't see where this is bad. This is actually really cool.
I think it works. You know, you also see this in the hotel industry, where an individual hotel has rooms that are unsold. They'll, you know, post a special, you know, rate on Twitter. And of course, the only people that are going to see that are the people that are following that hotel. But those are people who are likely to, you know, to use it, and they're filling the hotels that way. I don't see why airlines can't do the same thing, you know, with seats on a plane. If you've got maybe the planning horizon is a little bit longer. I mean, you don't necessarily just, you know, pick up and go for a plane ride at the drop of a hat. But if they're trying to fill seats in the not too distant future, it's an interesting way to do it.
And Max, now here's why I really kind of like this. One, you're not going to hit a lot of people from these fares. I mean, Twitter is very—it's direct marketing, and I think they understand that. But what it does is it starts your dialogue with people who are now interested in United Airlines at a direct level. It sets up that relationship, and it suggests that United is starting to get the fundamental concepts of customer service, perhaps, yeah, absolutely. Maybe.
I hope.
I hope so, too. And look, as much as we bash United, it's just simply because it's easy. But here is, look, we've been following them as they've been, they've started Twitter. They've been using it. We applaud them for that. They're using it for very specific purposes, whereas maybe Southwest is a little more open and more more conversational. But it has a definite purpose, and I like the reason behind it. So hats off to United Airlines for at least thinking outside the box on something as progressive as Twitter.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a very good sign.
But Twitters, come on.
You don't like Twitters, do you?
there are other ways to get a hold of us, and one of them is through the contact form on the website. So you can go to airplanegeeks.com. Up on the top, there's the contact us link. While you're up there, just go a couple links to the left and click on the t-shirts one and buy a couple t-shirts and then contact us.
There we go.
But you can fill out the forms there, and it works just as well. It ends up in my email box like Mike did. He says, "Hi guys, listen to episode 48 this morning, and I love the new format, splitting it into two sections, which we had planned doing for this week, but we had some time issues, so we're back into one." He says, "Great idea, and we get more listening time as well. Thought you might enjoy these links to Air New Zealand's new advertisement, and this is where the YouTube videos were, Max. We have two of them. They are YouTube videos. They will be embedded in the website. So thanks, Mike, for the email and for the videos, because I didn't get those earlier." And actually, Max, I had read this email first, so Mike wins for telling us first.
Outstanding.
Oh, also got an email from David. He was the winner of our t-shirt, one of our t-shirt suggestion contests. He says, "Keep up the great work." He said he came a bit late to our podcast, about 42, but rest assured I'm getting caught up on all the podcasts. How about trying to get some additional airline executives on the show? He said he really enjoyed Chris White this week. Yeah, we're trying. That's not for without effort, but we're definitely trying to get more airlines on. Says he's also a 1K flyer on United. He was platinum on Northwest for years. And before you say you're sorry for me flying United, I agree with you. What a poorly run airline it currently is. Have to give them credit for the new international business and first class seats, interestingly. He recently flew from Tokyo to Bangkok on one of the newly configured 747s. He says a great product that will attract flyers. So here we find a very pro United podcast.
Yeah, good.
You see how that shifts?
It's in the blink of an eye.
In the blink of an eye. I says, he also thinks the new podcast format will work well, but understand a true airplane geek could listen all day. If you guys need or want any assistance, please feel free to ask. Thank you, David, and we may do that. And we may do that with everybody else as well. If you could send us emails or record yourself on MP3 as Steve did. And it's really a lot easier than what you think. In fact, what I'm thinking about doing, Max, is putting together a video tutorial on how to do it using all free software. What do you think?
Oh, that's a great idea. Yep.
So I'm hoping to have the time to do that, and we'll announce it once we get that. But thank you, David, again for the email. It is very much appreciated. Do you want to get into a voicemail?
Hey, Airplane Geeks. How's it going? Listener PJ here. I'm a big fan of your show. Calling for a couple things. One, I want to comment on the new format where you're splitting the podcast into two. I understand why you're doing it, and it, part of me likes it, but the other part of me says that I really liked how your guest would comment on the news items that you had as you went along, and that then you used the news items to kind of transition into your main topic with the guest. I know your concern is about the length, but in my opinion, that's why they put pause functions in the iPods and different media players available to you, so you can listen to it in different parts as you go along. I listen to several podcasts, many of which are over an hour in length, and it's not a problem. The other thing I want to do is kind of give a shameless plug. I'm involved with the 1940 Air Terminal Museum here at Hobby Airport in Houston, Texas, and we are giving away a 1957 Cessna 172. It's a straight-tail Cessna. It's about 2,200 hours total time and about 750 hours since a major overhaul on the engine. We are selling raffle tickets for $50 apiece. We're selling no more than 2,500, and we are giving the plane away on July the 18th. For more information, call the museum at 713-454-1940 or visit us at www.1940airterminal.org. So thank you guys very much. I appreciate the podcast. Keep up the good work, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
We appreciate that email. Max, I know we've mentioned this before, but I'm glad he called, and it gives us a good reason to mention it again. They are raffling this off for the museum, and it's an interesting museum, and it's a very interesting website. So make sure you check that out at 1940airterminal.org.
Yeah, happy to plug that. There are aviation museums all over the place, many more than most people realize. So it's, I encourage people to, find those, seek them out, and, visit them and support them in any way you can. A lot of these things are sort of labors of love by a, few people, and very worthy of your support.
Agreed. And when you visit them at Hobby to buy the raffle tickets, make sure you're wearing your Airplane Geeks t-shirt.
Yeah, that's right.
See how that works?
That's very good. You're getting good at this. You're really good at this.
I still have one last email. This from Steven says, "Hi guys, just wanted to let you know that I like the idea of splitting up the episodes into two parts. It doesn't seem so rushed this way because one is dedicated to news and listener feedback while the other is the main guest. Keep up the good work and keep bringing us interesting guests to listen to." Thank you, Steven. Steven, again, is from the LGB blog at klgb.blogspot.com. Always like hearing from Steven. So, Max, what we've seen this week are two positive and one not so positive on our split. Now, granted, the suggestion that we keep it together so that the guests can comment on the news, we are still going to do that when we split the episodes into two, just as we did today. Unfortunately, we ran out of time and weren't able to get to the main topic with Addison, so hopefully we can get him on later. But expect more of the double episodes later on, and we do entirely plan on having them comment during the news. That's our favorite part, because then we don't have to do as much work. See?
Yeah, they tend to know a lot more than we do about certain subjects, and so it's
that's an understatement.
Great to get their viewpoint.
It's a definite understatement. So thank you, everybody, for sending the email and the voicemails, and a special thank you to our Australia desk for the Australia report. Thanks, Steve. And we also would very much invite more people to do that. We just had some outstanding an outstanding relationship with Steve and Grant in Australia. We've had some great news from Stephen Tornbloom from KLGB blog, as well as some of the other folks in the States. And we would definitely like more of that. So for anybody who's wondering, well, you know, I wonder if they talk about this, give us a call on the voicemail. If you say something in the voicemail and you're like, oh, I shouldn't have said that, just call back and say, hey, that thing I said, forget it. Never mind. Dan Webb used to do that all the time. but please do that. Recording yourself on MP3 is absolutely fantastic. And we love it because, again, you know, Max and I are just a couple of airplane geeks. No real credentials to do this. We just decided to sit down to do this, which means you people, the listeners, have probably twice the credentials we have. We want to hear from you. This is our podcast, us being the airplane geeks. So it's yours as well, and we want to make it that way. So send us what you think you have going on, either via email, on the contact form on the website. You can even leave us a comment there. Record an MP3 and email it to us, or give us a call or give us a call on our voicemail, 812-757-4252. And then buy a t-shirt.
Great.
So, Max, this split into two seems to have been combined back into one due to time. Thoughts? Comments?
I think, as you said, that people will see some splits, two for the price of one in the future, and sometimes this way. So we'll just try to you know, explore different possibilities. But, you know, as you said, our intent really is for the guests to participate in as much of it as possible. For some of them, they don't have the time or you know, the background to do that. And so you'll find it in different flavors. But we like to have the guests participate to the greatest extent possible.
Agreed. And the moral to this podcast is, this is your podcast, so send us what you'd like to hear in the email. Please record. Max and I do this, like we said, just because we happen to have the stuff to do it. So now we're opening that up to everybody. Send us your stories. Record yourself. You can even record it in Morse code if you wanted, just dots and clicks.
God, I used to know Morse code.
I never did.
Lucky you.
Thanks again, everybody, for joining us. That's it for episode 49. Join us next week on episode 50 of the Airplane Geeks podcast. We'll see you guys.
Take care, everybody. A lot of DC action.
A lot of DC action. And not Douglas, unfortunately. The other DC. See, Addison, we were talking about those jokes that fall flat.
There was one. Boy, am I glad I wasn't the first one.